I'm Carrie Simpson. Welcome to this Culture Guard special, a special that's dedicated to bringing you information about the state of our nation. The state of our nation as it relates to freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, freedom to be a Canadian, the Canadian who you want to be. And bringing us all of this reason for this topic, of course, is none other than Bill Watcott. Bill, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Bill, in my introduction of you, I always kind of smile because, you know, you fit so many perfect titles. So I want to run a few by you and let me know what you think of them, true or false, okay? Bill Watcott.
Certainly.
Bill Watcott, Canada's official number one truthsayer.
I try to be. That's what I strive for.
Okay, so that would be a true?
Yeah, it would be. I certainly try to be accurate in my flyers and in what I say.
All right, Bill Watcott, Canada's official number one free speech activist.
Well, I guess I got thrown in that role thanks to the homofascists at the Saskatchewan Human Rights Tribunal.
Bill Watcott, Canada's official number one good troublemaker.
Sure, I'll take that. True.
There you go. All right, people. So joining me today, of course, is none other than Bill Watcott. And Bill has sort of made a lot of appearances on Roadkill Radio. He's made a lot of appearances in human rights tribunals. And now, to his credit, his latest grand entry was into the Supreme Court of Canada, Halls of Decision and Fate. Bill, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this has been a big time in the world of Watcott. Now, I want to go back a little bit and tell our audience, because this is a special feature about your case. This is an important case and one that I think every Canadian should be aware of, and I hope a case that all of our students in our schools will eventually learn about. This is a case that began with you wanting to distribute your version of truth, and that should be your entitlement here in Canada. And you did this by actively distributing flyers on the hot-button topic of homosexuality. And as a result of that, you made a few gay activists a little bit upset. You went and hurt their feelings, so they filed a human rights case against you. Now, give us a little bit of background to this.
Well, I guess it started, like Human Rights Commissions got onto my radar screen when they engaged in political activism rather than impartial judicial decision-making with the Diane Haskett case. She was a mayor in London who was forced to proclaim a homosexual pride day and was fined $10,000 for not doing so. And rather than just render the decision, they waited until the middle of her election campaign to do it. And that told me that these weren't really impartial judicial bodies. And then I saw homosexuality being promoted in the Saskatoon public schools, and I kind of knew if I put out inflammatory flyers, I'd probably attract the attention of the human rights commissions. But, you know, I decided that that's what I wanted to do. And so I put out 5,000 flyers in one day in Saskatoon when they had this lesbian come in from Massachusetts who was involved in the Fistgate affair, actually, in Massachusetts. And certainly I did get my human rights complaints lodged against me, and then I just kept putting out more flyers, so I got more human rights complaints.
Now, finally, one of those human rights complaints resulted in a guilty verdict, you naughty little boy.
Well, actually, all four of them did.
Okay. So they combined all four of these, and you were fined $17,000?
$17,500. That's right.
Okay, and why? Because you broke a law?
Well, I guess that's highly subjective. But yeah, I guess if you criticize homosexuality in Saskatchewan, there is certain people sitting on those tribunals that think it's against the law.
Okay, because the law you broke is you hurt their feelings.
Yeah, that's exactly what it said, that I affronted their dignity and possibly exposed them to hatred.
Okay, so if you affront somebody's dignity, somehow that's worth $17,000, $500 in Canada. All right.
I guess that's actually more serious than shoplifting or auto theft.
What year was this, Bill, that these decisions came down?
The decision. I think it came down in 2004 or 2005, thereabouts.
All right. So the decision didn't surprise you or shock you or...
No. I've seen people far more reasonable than myself get crucified by those kangaroo courts.
Now tell me...
So I was fully expecting, and I even had flyers made for the day that the decision was rendered.
Now tell me, did your dignity get affronted that day the decision came down? Were your feelings hurt?
Actually, that's exactly what I put into my flyer. I put in, because they were actually asking for $20,000.
Oh.
That's what the so-called prosecutor wanted. And I said that that hurt my feelings when I put a flyer out with the tribunal head on the bum of a homosexual.
Ah, okay. So we have our ways of getting our message out. All right. So the tribunal comes down with this decision. You say, I don't think so. And it's time that Canadians, you know, with these laws, these tribunals, we find out exactly what the real legal status of them is. So you appeal this
exactly.
decision.
Exactly. For the whole process, I refuse to treat them like a legitimate body because they are a homosexual activist organization and they should be treated as such.
Okay, so they have a political bend, they have a political agenda, and I think that's ditto across this nation. Certainly, I'm familiar with the one out here in British Columbia. And,
it's no different even in PEI if you read about some Christian bed and breakfast owners there that were forced to close down their business and were fined because they didn't want two homosexuals from Quebec copulating in their house.
Okay, which should be their entitlement. You know, I
obviously
think,
it's their private property and they actually sleep there.
Yeah. No, I think that private property and this is where the whole tribunal issue has to be reinvestigated and reevaluated and well, I'd like to see them all gone, but anyway. So you decide no, time to see what the legal status of this is. You appeal the decision.
That's right.
And what court did you appeal to?
Saskatchewan Court of Queen's Bench.
All right. And what did the Queen's Bench tell you?
It was no surprise. The guy was a liberal, and he sunk Hugh Owens before me. So I was found guilty there on all counts, even the men-seeking boy ads that I exposed. And you know, the $17,500 fine was upheld.
All right. Let's talk about this, because you put out, basically, you published information out of a homosexual community's newspaper, an ad that basically solicited the relationship between a man and a boy.
Yeah, it was actually a verbatim photocopy. There wasn't very much of my own commentary, and the guy wasn't even looking for a relationship. That'd be too generous. He was looking to exchange video pics and more, and with the words very explicit, age not so relevant.
Hmm.
So basically, he was looking for a pedophile one-night stand, as far as I could interpret it. And then I just put the scripture verse, if you cause one of these little ones to stumble from our Lord, you know, better to tie a millstone around your neck and be cast in the sea. And in all the wisdom of the human rights machinery, they figured that was hate.
Wow.
Yeah, it was nuts. And that was 10,000 of the ad.
You know, and I think that Canadians owe you a debt of gratitude for at least exposing how ludicrous, how out to lunch, how manipulative and stupid these decisions are. So, let me just get this right. You take an exact photocopy of the ad.
That's right.
And you distribute it. And somehow you are promoting hate and contempt and affronting the dignity of gay activists.
Well, that's the thinking of human rights tribunal lawyers. And I sure hope it's not the thinking of the Supreme Court of Canada.
Okay, so let's go. Okay, so because we raised the issue of Hugh Owens. Hugh Owens was found guilty by the Queen's Bench also. He also went, did he not go through the Human Rights Commission as well?
Oh, he did. Yeah, that's where it all started.
And he had a bumper sticker, if my recollection is correct.
That's right, with a not allowed sign, you know, the red circle with the slash of two guys holding hands. And then he just had, I believe it was Romans 1 and Leviticus 20.
All right.
Just scripture verses, and he had those published, I think, in bumper stickers, and he also had them in the Leader Post, and that's what got him in trouble.
Okay, so
for a long time, I was actually driving a car with a bumper sticker on from him.
So you know it well.
Oh, I know it very well. Hugh Owens was actually there when I actually led the Gay Pride Parade in Regina. back in 2002. He actually videotaped the whole thing.
All right. Now, since how you raised that, you must take a little story of digression here, because I think this is good for people to understand the degree of your commitment to exposing truth, Bill. And you do some wonderfully creative things. Can you briefly tell us about how you ended up leading the Gay Pride Parade?
Well, it all started when I had a heterosexual family pride parade, and the first year the mayor proclaimed it. He actually ignored it. He wasn't going to proclaim it. The mayor in Regina is pro-abortion, pro-homosexual. He's a fiscal conservative, but he's a social liberal. And I actually put out a whole bunch of press releases saying that I was going to go to the Human Rights Commission to get a heterosexual parade, because I was being discriminated against as a heterosexual because I wasn't getting my proclamation. Now, the whole purpose of this was to actually get rid of proclamations. I don't need anyone to proclaim my heterosexuality, but I thought, well, if the homos are going to do it, I might as well do it. And amazingly, to my surprise, all the media took me seriously, gave me loads of coverage, and the mayor panicked and proclaimed my heterosexual family pride proclamation, which was a wonderful proclamation based on Genesis 1. In the beginning, they made a male and female, and Matthew 19, which is sort of the foundation of the family. For the first 24 hours, homosexuals were saying that I ought to have my proclamation, and then when they read what it was, they weren't very happy, but by then it was already proclaimed. So I actually did have a very successful first parade. The second parade, the mayor, this is the following year, the mayor refused to proclaim it, so I announced I was going to commit civil disobedience. And when I announced that, I thought, well, I got to do something now, because it was all over in the press. So I actually went to the homosexual parade. They had no idea I was there. I had a huge sign that said, "Bare Bottom Pitifuls are celebrating buggery in Regina. God help us." It was on a 5-foot pole, and the sign itself was 5 by 3 feet. It was huge. And then I had a smaller sign that I was wearing that said, "Mayor Pat Fiacco, mayor of all the homosexuals." That's because his election slogan was mayor of all the people, and clearly it wasn't. He was mayor of all the homosexuals. So with this, I hid behind a pillar that was at the Saskatchewan Wheat Board, which was on Albert Street, which is a very major street, and the parade at the beginning, it was going to turn a corner and start coming on to Albert. And so when they did, I let two police cars go by that was leading the parade, and then I ran out and started leading it. And so all of the northbound traffic was still coming. It was actually the southbound traffic that was blocked. And everyone coming northbound saw my sign first. And then the homosexuals were quite upset. They tried to block my sign, but they didn't have any signs big enough to do it. One went on rollerblades and tried to run into me, and I believe God supernaturally protected me, because he actually hit me very hard, and I didn't feel anything, and he went flying right up into the air and landed on his back. And then the police threatened to arrest the homosexuals if they hit me anymore. And then they had a debate on whether to arrest me to get me out of the parade, and they couldn't come to a consensus. And I led the entire parade for 2.5 kilometers with homosexuals throwing various objects at me. I actually led it to the legislature, which I had no plans of doing. I didn't think I was going to make it there. I thought I was going to be lynched in a block. And Chamberlain, a guy you are well familiar with,
that would be James Chamberlain, the social justice coordinator.
That's right. They actually had him invited to the parade. I didn't know about this, and he was going to address it at the legislature. I got up on his podium, and I was the first person to address all 400 screaming homosexuals, and I preached to them for about 5 minutes and then walked out of it.
All right, Bill, I want to pick up on a few things and then get back to your court case on that came to my mind. You talked about the anger and the words and the violence directed towards you. You know, as an individual...
Yeah, that was pretty intense stuff.
Well, you know, and this is what's amusing, well, or very serious about this whole subject matter. You know, as a person who's always tried to bring truth to this discussion and debate myself, it has never ceased to amaze me. I think in the thousands and thousands of people that I've ever spoken to, I've encountered maybe two people who used language that I wouldn't agree with, and I shut them down on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, but yet, anytime somebody speaks truth about this, and I'm thinking of another Culture Guard project here, our expose about Out in Schools and how that program is used to lure students to involve themselves with hardcore gay porn through the Queer Film Festival. You know, we are hated, vilified, death threats, the most vulgar language directed towards us, the name-calling, the attempts to bully. In your case, here's a perfect example at the Pride Parade, you know, where you were assaulted.
Yeah, I was. But, you know, God did supernaturally protect me, and I led the entire thing successfully. And
yeah,
as Christians, we can take solace in that our God is greater.
But you know what? But aside from, God's divine protection over you, you know, isn't there something really wrong with this one-sided debate? Why doesn't the media pick up on the fact that these people are vile? They're cruel. They promote hatred and contempt. They despise.
My own thinking is that much of the media and the media and entertainment is dominated by homosexuals, so they have no interest to join that side.
Well, either that or a lot of people are deceived, because that's the other, you know, when I, and in fear, and I would suggest this now, I think for a lot of years, people were deceived, they thought they were doing a really good thing. Now I know in my discussions with people, these are senior editors of some very prominent news sources here in British Columbia and in Ottawa, that they are in fear of the sex activists. They are in fear of the what they view as the retribution. You know, there's the 200 yahoos, right, that make a lot of noise and create a lot of grief. There are a large part of the homosexual community that don't agree with these tactics and don't agree with what's going on here. You know, there is becoming a growing division within the sex activist camp, too, because a lot of their antics have now backfired on them. This rhetoric that you and people like myself tend to expose, you know, that's so old. That's so yesteryear. That's so, you know, passé now. You know, come up with a new line, guys, you know, something. But, you know, do you sense that now within the media and maybe within the judiciary that there is a fear over siding with truth?
Well, certainly in the media I see it, although I have to admit I was surprised at how balanced, it wasn't perfect, but how balanced the coverage of my Supreme Court case is, and how many, many editors and journalists who don't really agree with me and opinion writers said that I shouldn't be silenced in the way that the Human Rights Tribunal was trying to do it. So with that, I actually see a change, because 5 years ago, the media was by and large indifferent to whether I went to the gulag or not. So there is a change, but there certainly is fear. Political correctness reigns, and political correctness is often at odds with truth and reality on the ground, and that's why we got to push on.
I see the politically correct ear sort of fading into the sunset, if you will.
I hope so.
Yeah, and a lot of it has to do with people who are willing to speak truth in the most unique way, such as yourself. The other thing that has to do with, of course, is our financial situation, the fiscal realities that people are facing, and the amount of diseases and problems that are associated with those sex activists and the promiscuity that's rampant through the homosexual community.
Well, treating HIV alone, and that is not counting any of the multitude of other diseases that afflict the homosexual lifestyle, treating HIV alone, I did some research the other day, cost in the year 2001, so you can imagine that it went up, $2 billion to the Canadian taxpayer. That's hardly a private matter.
Yeah. Well, this is, I say, you know, the what you want to do in your bedroom's fine, just stay out of my government's coffers, you know? Okay, but let's fast forward now. You go to the Queen's Bench. You obviously knew the writing was on the wall if the same judge that viewed Hugh Owen's case was there. Then you appealed it to the higher court in Saskatoon.
Saskatchewan Court of Appeal, yeah.
Okay, and what did they say?
They were unanimous, and they were very strong in saying that my charter right to free speech was infringed.
Okay. There was no issue. They seemed to have, and I read that decision, the points that they made absolute sense. They were logical. It was clear.
They actually accepted Tom's argument that there's a difference between behavior and the person.
Now, Tom, just so we can be clear, Tom Shuck is your lawyer. We've interviewed him times on the show I co-host on Roadkill Radio. He stood with you throughout this ordeal at all various levels of the courts.
All 10 years.
He might like you, huh?
He must. He also, I think, is out of pocket about close to $500,000 on me, so he better like me.
Yeah, well, I think what is most important is he's dedicated to freedom of speech, freedom of religion. All right, so you win at the High Court in Saskatchewan. The Human Rights Commission appeals to the Supreme Court of Canada.
That's right.
Now, was this a little quiet affair? It was just you against the Saskatchewan Human Rights Commission?
No, there was actually a record number of interveners. I believe 24 applied and 23 were accepted.
24 interveners applied, 23 were accepted.
That has
to be a record.
That is. The previous record, I was told, was 17.
Now, I understood, too, that originally the Attorney General of Canada also applied to intervene or wanted to be a party in this. Is that right?
Yes, and I believe they were accepted, and then inexplicably, fairly late into it, they withdrew. So actually, I stand corrected. 22 were standing in the courtroom. There was actually one rejected, a very good group, Association for Reform Political Action. And then the Attorney General of Canada withdrew.
Okay, so now I find that fascinating because they withdrew. I mean, there started to be a groundswell of outrage over what has gone on here, the concerns around free speech. You think the Attorney General, if they really believed 100% in these human rights commissions, would in fact be defending the laws that allow them to exist in Canada?
Well, thankfully, it is a conservative government. And they have to pay some attention to their grassroots base. And I believe that they saw no benefit in standing with human rights tribunals. They never told me that, but that's my speculation.
Okay, so what was it, October 13th that you appeared before the Supreme Court of Canada?
That's October 12th.
October 12th, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to, obviously you were in the gallery there.
That's right.
And there was nobody.
Did you get that picture from the Globe and Mail I sent you?
Yes, thank you. And we will make sure that has a prominent place in this production, okay? Now, you attend the Supreme Court of Canada. There were a number of activists, I assume, sex activists there that were hoping that the Supreme Court of Canada would find you guilty.
That's right. Yeah, there's a good mix of people that supported me and people who don't like me at all.
All right. Now, you observed the proceedings. What was your read on the justices?
My read is that they're extremely liberal. I would say Beverly McLachlan actually asked the most intelligent questions. Rosalia Bella, she actually played, I believe that she played her cards, and she referred to my flyers as hate, at least on a couple of occasions, before even rendering a decision. There was a French older judge who was very confused on the issues of race. He kept wanting to equate my flyers and homosexuality with doing the same thing with blacks, if I put out flyers and put black there instead.
Okay, Bill, can I just stop you on that debate and discussion? Because that's a point that always fascinates me with this discussion. The fact that the sex activists have basically attempted to market their agenda, riding in on the coattails of legitimate civil rights cases and movements, such as, you know, blacks and slavery and women's rights and those kinds of things. Since when did, somebody's behavior warrant the same credibility, importance as somebody who is born black or born Chinese?
Well, I find it to be very disingenuous, but it is intelligent. It's been highly successful. If they ran strictly on the right to, commit sodomy, they would lose. But by saying that they're being bullied and treated as blacks were in the civil rights era, It's highly successful. I'd say the majority of Canadians have drank that Kool-Aid and bought those lies.
But if they start thinking about it logically, Bill, and maybe this is in part a large fault and or blame can go to the media. If we started,
well, the media is like I believe a good number of them are dominated by homosexuals and leftists, and they've helped homosexuals push that agenda.
Okay, but we don't, you know, the individuals who now want to be informed don't have to rely on the conventional forms of the old style of media. We have an ability.
Well, thank God for roadkill in the internet, eh?
Well, exactly what I was going to say. But one of the things I think as Canadians become more aware of, and this kind of puts a whole kibosh into the argument about race and ethnicity and all the rest of it, because, you know, we start looking at the behaviors and the costs. You mentioned $2 billion. I suggest that that's a drop in the bucket compared to what it really costs, because not only do we have the medical and health service costs associated with the AIDS epidemic here in Canada, but we also have created an industry out of the nonprofit and charitable sectors that get government money as well. And when you start adding all those figures, I bet this is a $5 or $6 little billion-dollar adventure that's going on.
Well,
here.
Then there's also the loss of productivity when you're sick and you're dying young. I agree. It was just simply $2 billion on medical costs in the year 2001.
Okay.
And I'm not even sure if that covered all medical. I'm not sure if that covered home care, for instance. I think it was mostly pharmaceuticals. So, no, it could be billions upon billions that this sexual behavior costs us.
Okay,
not
so,
to mention the pain and the morbidity associated with it.
Okay, and that's directly related to a behavior, a chosen way to conduct oneself as far as sexual practices goes. Now,
well, to Tom's credit, he pointed that out to the judges rather succinctly, actually.
Okay, but this is, I mean, that puts the whole argument in a different context. You cannot equate what you're doing and how you're doing it with the movements, for instance, for women's rights or for, you know, better recognition of black rights and all the rest of the civil rights,
no,
the legitimate.
It's comparing apples and oranges. Blacks are born that way.
Yeah.
You can't stop being black. There's nothing immoral to being black. You know, there is no specific black behaviors that are condemned by all the major world religions. Homosexuality, on the other hand, it is a chosen behavior. There may be compulsion. Many homosexuals believe, and perhaps it's true, that in some cases with sexual addiction, they can't help but act out. But that doesn't make it right.
Well, you know, I have an exchange going with a sex activist at the moment, although he hasn't written back because I made some of these arguments to him. But he's HIV positive, has AIDS. So he gets a disability pension, plus he receives additional money from a organization that's funded by you and I as taxpayers to offset his residential costs. And he said very clearly in his correspondence to me that he has an expectation that Canadians will foot his bills for a disease that was 100% preventable.
Yeah. Well,
and he has a right. And he has a right. There's this right of entitlement. I can go and do whatever I want. I have no responsibility back to Canada for it.
Well, I was a home care nurse for 6 years in Toronto's homosexual district. And actually, we can get into a whole new realm, socialized medicine. It really does create an expectation of entitlement. And, yeah, right at the top of that list is homosexuals who get lots of government money, and they've become very, very accustomed to it.
Now, Bill, I just want to talk about your flyers, because I have read your flyers, and I find the language to be concise. The language would probably, you know, your use of the word, for instance, sodomite. But then when you start looking at the fact of what the sexual practices are, you're 100% accurate in your use of that term. Now,
I don't have a fight with people who struggle with homosexual desires. My fight is with people who want to act out on those desires and then push it on everyone else.
And the reason why I was going down this line of questioning is because you're also bringing the debate and discussion back to a place of factuality, of straight talk, of truth talk. And that seems to be what your biggest crime is, that you're willing to speak the truth about things.
That's exactly what I believe Rosalie Abella said. When she said that I refer to homosexual acts as filthy, she asked Tom, is that not hate?
Well, how can that be hate? Anyone engaging themselves in unnatural sexual practices involving the anus,
they're exposing themselves to E. coli. It is filthy, objectively speaking. And Tom said that in the court. And needless to say, that even put the Supremes off their meds for a moment. They were stunned when he said that so clearly.
Well, but isn't that the essence of what's going on here, is that we as Canadians have been conditioned to conform to a certain form of language associated with issues that relate to homosexuality? And if anyone dares to venture into the territory of truth, God forbid, you are vilified, a hate monger, and all the rest of it. When you're simply expressing in very concise and to the point terms.
I believe half of our battle is going to be won or lost on language. And, the homosexuals have over the years employed public relations firms to polish their image. And part of it is a deliberate sanitizing of the language. And that's why I never call them gay. And that's why I don't use terms like civil rights. It really is about sexual behavior and right and wrong, and sodomite is a biblical word that accurately describes someone who does sodomy. It's not a hate word. It is an inflammatory word on a certain level. It isn't meant to be a word of compliment. You know, it's kind of right up there with alcoholic. But it is an accurate word, and it is a biblical word, and it certainly puts the debate, even in terms of mental imagery, probably a little more accurately than just two guys benignly holding hands, which gay gives that kind of an image.
Well, and I think Webster's would agree with you, as well as a few other dictionaries too.
Yeah, sodomite is someone who commits sodomy. As I said, I don't have a struggle. I have friends that struggle with homosexuality, and they endeavor to live a chaste lifestyle, and I got the highest respect for someone who takes that cross. But for those who want to indulge in it and then celebrate it, and then push it into our schools, and then take away the right of dissent, and push it onto the world religions, that I don't have so much respect for.
Bill, I want to talk a little bit about what has happened as a result of this. You were featured in a documentary called Freedom of Whatcott. And
yes.
This documentary chronicles the saga that's associated with this true-to-life story that you're living out. Did you have a camera crew that kind of followed you around for a while?
Yes, that's a fellow from New York by the name of Reverend Robert Munoz, and it's quite a professionally done documentary. I was very impressed
when I saw it myself. It's exceptional.
Yes.
And people,
it's going to be featured in November at the Free Thinkers Festival, which I believe is chaired by a liberal homosexual, or I guess a libertarian homosexual would be more accurate.
Now, this documentary, because I've watched it, but, you know, it drives home the point of, well, number one, the activities that you involved yourself in. But You know what else that came across to this is your conviction for truth. And I think that was over the years that we've been interviewing you and kind of following this saga. I have to tell you, one of the things I appreciate about you so much is if you ask a question, you're going to get an answer.
Yeah, I try not to be too political. I believe that doesn't serve the people well sometimes.
Now, Bill, where do you see this going? The Supreme Court of Canada will come down with his decision probably in 6 to 8 months on this. Do you see change happening in Canada? I tend to think that the era, as I said before, of political correctness is done. So many people are fed up and done with it. We have the evidence in spades now as far as the damaging effect to our nation, the costs that have been associated with it, the breakdown of the family unit, all kinds of carnage that has been, you know, in overt supply now that we can see the result of our movements in a very bad direction. Do you see us stemming the tide here and turning it a little bit?
I do see some changes in the media, especially with the introduction of Sun News Network.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as optimistic as you when it comes to the young people going through our public school system. I went through Grant McEwen University 2 years ago, And I was literally ostracized for being a Christian activist. The teachers were extremely politically correct. A couple of them admitted they were politically correct and told the students so much right in their textbooks, textbook teaching, that we should strive to be politically correct. So I think it's still a big fight. I think there's a big fight in the courts. I don't think the courts are really embracing reality. I think they are still sunk in political correctness.
I agree with you.
Yeah, and it's a big fight to get our schools back. We're nowhere close to doing that. That being said, I think the private sector is starting to fight back a little bit. I'm hoping that what I see in the media is a positive change that sustains itself, that we can have truthful reporting and commentary that's open to both sides of the debate. And I think amongst the common person, there could be a change, but Canadians are an apathetic and fearful lot. So I still think we got a lot of work ahead of us.
Well, I agree with you on that front, but I do see change coming. I see Canadians saying enough is enough. I see young people saying, don't lie to me. And, you know, their tools for research are a little bit different. I suspect those university profs that are, you know, agents of change and indoctrination probably will be exposed, you know, in the not too distant future for these students.
Well, that's also part of my work is to do just that.
Yeah. Bill Watcott, yeah. We've run out of time here. How can people follow you? Do you have a website?
Yes, they can visit my website, freenorthamerica.ca, and they can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, there you go. Bill Watcott, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Bill Watcott, and yes, he is a favorite at Roadkill Radio, and a story that we felt was important enough to make this Culture Guard special. His case embodies all that should be of concern to us here in Canada. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to express those views, all are intrigued and involved in this little case that he's got going. And it's not a little case. It's a big case. As it says, record interveners in this. We need to watch this. We need to be vigilant, people. We need to support those that are out there doing the good work. Bill mentioned a little bit about the cost that his lawyers have absorbed as a result of this. It's time that we as a nation put a little money behind those that are standing up and doing the battle. I'm Carrie Simpson, president of Culture Guard. Thank you for joining us.